Welcome, dear listeners and fellow K-drama lovers, to your favorite critical K-drama podcast, the K-drama Feuilleton Podcast, with me, Maksu, and my lovely co-host, Sally. In today's episode, we are talking with our guest, Snigdha. The second part of our talk focuses on another large group of young women in the countryside, namely marriage migrant women, who are quite underrepresented in Korean media. While we mostly discussed the movie Little Forest and the drama Gombaeryeong or Heaven's Garden, many other recent dramas are mentioned and connections to former episodes made. Enjoy, everyone!
Very far off from the point.
Yes, okay, well, we should go back to Heaven's Garden.
But I think it was very important to talk about, like...
The cafe owner, I mean, he is a central figure.
He's a cafe owner, yeah.
Oh, there we go.
And he's very important in the drama because he is not only just her love interest, but he's also her partner. The Jae-in, who is the main character, her father starts a cooperative. So it's very odd and left. Mm. Like, it's very oddly left for the drama. And I mean, I was just like, okay. And then they start a cooperative to like sell their like just garlic jam or whatever they were making.
Garlic jam, that's great. I have watched it. I'm definitely going to watch it now. Cooperative and garlic jam. And so fast.
In order to save their like village from like these big factory, and it's actually like a resort. They were trying to build a resort, and they were like, "No, we're gonna make sure that the villagers have, you know, ability to sell their produce." And I think it was Omi Jacha, like, which is like,
yes,
which Max's favorite tea.
Yes, my favorite drink.
It's quite nice. It's really nice, and apparently that area is very famous for, or it's actually very famous for in real life, for Omija production. So they kind of build a cooperative so that they can sell these like products to, you know, companies, so farmers get enough money for their labor. And that was funny because Jae-in and Woo-gyun, who was the guy, they were both from the city, so they played a very important role there because they're educated. They can make PowerPoints, right? The only thing
you were mentioning that. I mean, this is a bit kind of a misrepresentation that people from the city actually take in this leading role.
Yeah, actually, it's something local government.
Not the locals.
Funnily enough, local governments, like I read about this, some places actually encourage each own people to take up these kinds of roles in the countryside, like where they can give their kind of skill, whatever is in their skill bank, right? So, which was kind of a point of conflict in the drama as well, because existing head of the village kind of felt like he was, you know, being replaced. But for Woo-gyun and Jae-in especially, this is like a new start. Like, this isn't the countryside is giving them, you know, economic opportunity and like and not only like a love or you know new start in terms of going somewhere else, but it's very many new things happening in your life for the better, which is very crucial to note because there is another character in this drama which you would have like seen, whose name is, I think, Myung-ok, who is the other female character in this. She's not the main character. However, she's like a main side character with a large storyline. And Jae-in and Myung-ok first met when Myung-ok was trying to commit suicide, actually. So it was very... So obviously, from the very beginning, it was like she saved her. Jae-in saved Myung-ok. And the relationship was always, throughout the drama, is kind of debt. For Myung-ok, countryside was not the kind of place it was for Jae-in. Even if you like watch drama, just for the like general viewer, you can see what kind of, so she was, as soon as, you know, she came into the story, she was the main focus of the show's kind of like, in terms of like trying to get her married to this another village bachelor. That was like her main story.
This was so forced, though. I
mean, yeah, it was so
funny. She was like, "Yeah, this guy is also single. You should maybe."
How about this man who looks like he's 10 years older than you? But so she actually kind of lies about being Korean, Chinese Korean, because like this is like, you know, there's these rumors, stereotypes against Korean Chinese, against like
North Korean
refugees. So she's actually a North Korean, supposed to be one, but I don't think she's a refugee. I think she just crossed over and just kind of like started living. I think it is a bit strange.
I mean, the few episodes I watched, because she pretends to be, but then she also tells the main character, for example, that she still has a sister in the north,
probably paid
some broker, right, to get to South Korea or something like that, because she also talks about money and something like that,
right. So she basically lies in the beginning because she doesn't want people to know she's from North Korea.
It doesn't make much sense to say, though, that she is Chinese Korean instead, like,
because they also, there's a lot of stereotypes against Chinese Korean people, which also come into being because when she's getting married, her mother-in-law is like, Korean Chinese people, they are like, they're like petty criminals, and you know, they're all kind of horrible, like absolutely like untrue, horrible.
Many like Koreans still have these kind
of stereotypes. Why is that? Though,
It's just kind of xenophobic. It's there's like this big thing that if you get voice phishing, it's mostly Korean Chinese people. That's not actually these days.
I think this whole organ donation, like business and all
it's
that.
It's just xenophobia, basically. It's completely xenophobia. There is no actual, there is literally, in fact, a lot of the working class jobs, like if you go to a kimbap jongguk, which is like the main kimbap like chain in Seoul and in Korea, is like, it's mostly run by Korean Chinese women. Like most shiktang ajummas are Korean Chinese. Like it's mostly working class. You see many people.
Interesting.
So it's unfortunate stereotype, but you kind of like saw that in the drama, but at least because she was Korean, like as in Korean Chinese and not like North Korean in any way,
it was okay. Apparently.
I don't know if it's beneficial at all. I think,
anyways, yes, okay, well,
in the realm of the drama. Yeah, what were you asking?
I mean, what you also mentioned in your paper, though, that what I saw from the few scenes, that she is really more the object of the whole story, in the sense that they decide what to do with her, or like the man kind of approaches her as if she was not a real
person.
Yeah, it's terrible. Like,
which kind of happens a lot, like, you know, like how she ends up marrying this guy is very different from Jane and Ugyeon's relationship, like absolutely different. And I don't know if the viewer can see the very discrepancy there. Like the entire kind of push of the drama was towards getting her assimilated into the structure, the North Korean woman into the structure of the countryside. And yeah, so she basically, how they got married is like, he kind of forced his way into like where she sleeps, and like forces.
This was a really creepy scene. I watched this yesterday.
and he just like shows his,
you shouldn't be alone. Something like, you shouldn't be alone in this restaurant, and then he comes in and like,
oh god,
it's very problematic. One thing I was going to mention, actually, he had one line, and he said, "Well, I'm living in the countryside with my mother. I'm not a very attractive like marriage partner." Like in the sense, like he was very self aware of his position. I noticed this, like also in light of this other paper or dissertation we were talking about.
Right.
That men in the countryside really are seen as not very attractive as.
Or this sense of this sense of demasculinization, or this
beginning
of masculinity. Yeah, definitely that's there. But so when these men meet women who are 10 years, 15, that the average difference in age, by the way, is 15 years.
Wow.
Marriage migrant women and bachelors who are marrying them from the countryside. So it's a real power dynamic, right?
Wow, yeah.
With the mother-in-law or like the mother of the husband involved, like this is also a different level of extreme patriarchy in a sense, right? Because
yeah, the patriarchal nature of the countryside only reveals to us in when we look at the world through Myeongguk, right? It doesn't as much for Jane. Of course, there is the kind of like the kind of cited on her, which is of that she's divorced or like single or like kind of she's not divorced, she's separated from her husband, she divorces at some point in the story, and obviously so the village women don't like her, but it's very quickly resolved is my point. Like it's very quickly resolved, and it's not as violent as when we see in case of Myeongguk, on whose head like the entire story after she gets married is revolved around her and her conflict with her mother-in-law. Which is
the mother-in-law also tells her like she shouldn't work in this restaurant anymore, women shouldn't work, she should like,
which is I think the show is trying to show like the reality also, like, you know, of what happens to marriage migrant women when they're in these situations. So so through these dramas, we are kind of able to see that in a large way.
Yes, I agree.
Which is, even through dramas, you can see that even dramas, which is like a land of fantasy, right? In terms of, it's fiction, so it reflects our desires towards the countryside. So through Jane, you know, if I'm a Korean woman watching it, through Jane, you can have representation in the sense if I move to the countryside and I can, you know, gain certain kinds, or if you are Haewon in Little Forest, you know, what kind of life I'd be able to live. However, when it comes to Myeongguk, that kind of drama being, if drama is actually a land of fantasy and a reflection of desires, then for Myeongguk, her desire should remain in the realm of the family or the domestic. She has a child and she's shown to have a happy family at the end, right? So if I'm a marriage migrant woman, or then my desires are pointed in this way,
or family, constructed marriage,
the constructed desire, even in the realm of fantasy, is constructed in this way. So that's something we can definitely see. It's not like a drama in which like you come and then.
But also, I think economic stability in a sense, because from the beginning, these episodes I watched, she mentions, I need a husband with money. I need money for getting my sister out.
Right.
Absolutely. This is also, I think, mainly for the migrant women, important factor that there's a better life economically. Than in this, and I mean this holds true for the Kwichon women in a sense as well, but on a different, like totally different level, obviously.
Definitely. I mean, I agree that that's a very good point. I didn't really mention about that, how right from the beginning, she knew she couldn't have desires in terms of actually meeting a partner who loves her in any sense, or, you know, or just
as an equal,
it was always money, it was practical, you know, so
like transactional more.
So it was very interesting how that drama worked in terms of fantasy land of Gombaeryeong for like for this woman, and then land of reality for the other. So it was interesting. And to be fair, it is not that when Korean women will move back to the countryside, they will fare the same way as Haewon or Jane. Absolutely not. I mean, there are so many things that could go wrong. And there are hardly, you know, proper government welfare policy because there's in actual statistics that I kind of mention in my chapter, is there's a lot of conflict between Gichonins and Gichon people and the, you
know, the local community. Yeah,
there's a lot of issues. Most Gichon people who do go there, like not most, but there's a large part of them who cannot sustain themselves there. You know, they intend to come back to the city and restart, like quite disappointed, you know, with that experience. So it's, so while drama, we cannot say that it's a complete, it's not a reflection of reality. It's a reflection of desire, like, oh, what it could be. Right. So, yeah. So it, I think it's important to kind of like know that it doesn't go that way, even if you do it.
But it does have like both Little Forest and Gumbaryeong both have kind of some real aspects, though. I mean, in Little Forest, I was just reminded because there is this friend who actually lives in the country and works in this local bank. And I mean, she's not the main character, but she kind of represents a real local and who made her whole life in the countryside. And
whose boss is very like very oppressive.
Also,
her boss is quite. And if you go to the, I think there was a karaoke scene, and you have to constantly shake your.
But she kind of resists. In that scene, she resists the boss. But anyways, what I was thinking, because she also sees the friend, obviously she welcomes the friend and she is happy to have her back and stuff, but she also says, you're not like from here, you don't understand, you can also just leave again to the city, like that kind of, this was also a bit mentioned. And I think in Heaven's Garden too, like there are these locals who are a bit suspicious of the newcomers, and in the beginning mostly, but then there are conflicts with them.
Yeah.
And amongst the children too, like it's also a bit complicated all. I mean, I didn't really get
In the sense, that kind of thing, it's there's a peppering of reality, I would say. And it is sort of resolved too easily, in my opinion, in these dramas, like, obviously, it's a drama, so it is reflecting desires and fantasies. Like it cannot only have reality, which is why, while there is that, mostly it's a very neatly tied up at the end kind of affair.
Yeah,
in both of these cases,
We often have that in other dramas too, like happy ending and
But when we look at rural kind of dramas, we are looking for like what that shows, that kind of happy ending, what that signifies for these two groups of women. That's kind of what I was trying to look at, which is you can never expect a drama to show you reality as it is. A documentary, and even a documentary has opinions and
I was just reminded one last thing, maybe on our episode on foreigners in Korean drama, which was very general, and we also mentioned Squid Game, for example, with North Korean defector and also guest worker in this drama, and I think there is some more representation of Tamunhwa, like intercultural Korean settings in a sense, maybe also through Netflix productions like Itaewon Class or like Squid Game, these kind of shows, and we hope that there will be some like real representations of also migrant women.
I mean, even if there isn't a real representation, like I would have
more representation.
Firstly, because there are so many very different experiences of people. These women are coming from various different places. Their experiences are all different. If we only have very few of them, and very, very few and far in between of rural women, marriage migrant women, really, the only largest representation of them is actually the show called Gobu Yeoljeon. I don't know if you watched it. It's like, it literally means mother and daughter, in English, multicultural mother and daughters fight. And you can see all the episodes are on YouTube, if you're interested and you want to like watch that.
We'll put it in the show notes.
So if you watch that, you'll see it's a very popular show. And so it's every episode comes with like a mother-in-law and a foreign, like, you know, like daughter-in-law, and there's a conflict, and the show is actually usually showed from the perspective of the mother. And there's actually a lot of research on Gopi Arjun. You can find it. There's a lot of academic research on it. And just the way it is shot, it is clearly from, you know, the Korean mother-in-law's perspective. The daughter-in-law doesn't have a translator, so she ends up sounding simple, you know? Because you're speaking in Korean, and it usually ends with them going to the daughter-in-law's country and like to her home, and then kind of like
explaining the background in a sense or something.
Not really, like they just kind of like make up after that. Sometimes they talk about me, like, this is where I grew up, this is my mom, this is my father. Sometimes they don't even have never even met like each other because you know,
came for
the first time, got married. Those cases as well.
Is it mostly migrant women, or are there also
only foreigner marriage migrant women? Only.
I see.
And you know, like out of most marriage migrants in 2019, I think something like 86% were women, right? So it's a large number. And so that show is actually probably where you see on television marriage migrants the most. In look at the framing already. They're in like Gopi Arjun, right? They're in a mother and daughter fight. That's it. So, I mean, dramas can never be a real representation fully, but they can definitely represent desires or desire, you know, that are not just that the Korean society demands from them, but desires that these women might actually have. Usually TV shows reflect demands of the viewer in a large way that also shapes, you know, how we look at the world, but it also reflects what we want to see right now. But when it comes to these marriage marketing women, like are their desires really this, like, you know, the same as what the Korean like society wants from them, which is
saying, I think, integration or like this becoming Korean is the goal of government, obviously. That they speak fluent Korean, there are Korean classes. These Korean programs, Korean culture, something like that.
I guess it's also a question, like, at some point about who produces these dramas and like who are the obviously the makers of the show, and who gives the money for it and the programming and all of that, and if there's like no representation of or like presence of migrant women with those experiences in that process, or maybe a person who has an interest in showing that perspective or the desires, as you say, of these women, then I think it's quite interesting, like, kind of thinking, who imagines then the desires of these women? So it's like it's the Korean, probably the kind of Korean.
So who's
male gaze?
The gaze is definitely. So that was basically why we looked at Gombeyeong, because it has both those women, and it really starkly makes you see it on the same screen how different it is. I also talked about another show, but I don't know if you have the time to talk about it, but it very similar, but it was with a Vietnamese woman. It was called Namchon over the Mountain. It's from 2003. So there's actually so few dramas with actually with foreigner daughter-in-laws, especially like marriage migrants in the rural area, that it's almost very difficult to talk about it in terms of representation outside variety shows and documentaries. Ones that those are like pretty, like, either just kind of from the gaze of, like, you know, the kind of like the Korean society in which they would like them to assimilate. Or in Namchon of the Mountain, it's actually it's really like almost difficult to watch from like 2022 perspective. It's very difficult to find that show. I think it's available on YouTube also, Namchon of the Mountain.
I think there's a second Vietnamese character who's a bit more kind of problematic from the Korean view
perspective.
It sounds interesting though to have this comparison of two figures, or like friends also, I think.
Were friends. Basically, what I was trying to talk about is like this kind of extreme difference between like, so it's either the, I mean, in terms of when we look at textual analysis, when we look at literature, there's always like this virginal figure and then there's the fallen woman figure, right? So there was that kind of dynamic going for the daughter-in-law, who was this virginal, innocent figure who's naive. So this naive idea of a, foreign marriage migrant doesn't know about Korean society, who has to be protected at all times. That was kind of like Namchon. It was kind of the theme of her story. She has to be protected. She has to be babied, right? And her friend who actually came here not as a marriage migrant, but as a worker.
Right.
She came as a, you know, like a migrant worker. And she obviously was not, she wouldn't stand up when like elders would enter or. She wouldn't do all of those things that Korean society requires, especially, you know, requires of you.
Yeah.
Especially as a woman. So she was always labeled as the bad one. So don't like mix them, you know.
So interesting.
I was thinking, like, also I think in the Waegukin episode, in the foreigners in Korean drama episode, we talked about Squid Game and how he represents kind of an immigrant who is ideal in a sense with, like,
Ali.
How he is very respectful to the Korean artist. He's calling them sajangnim and stuff. Yeah. And, like, it's very polite and all.
Which is very exposing of Korean society, right? I mean, it's actually does, like, when the viewer watches it, you're not going, like, oh, she's a bad woman. You're actually going, why do you think that's a bad thing, you know, when you watch
it? As an international viewer.
So actually, I don't think the intention of the show is actually to make that, like, you know, to say that she's a fallen woman, but it kind of reflects like what Koreans may think of that. The show's trying to talk about it in a certain sense. But at the same time, there was also a tendency to actually baby
the other one.
That was, I don't think, exposed as much, because at times that the husband used to take her passport away and hide it, which is a crime, right? It is like, it is a crime. Anybody cannot do that.
Dodgy,
So, and that was actually not problematized in the show at all. So I don't think the show's trying to say this is a bad thing, because his why he reacted like that, we are made to understand it. Like he reacted like that because this and this and these.
In order to protect her, interesting. Yeah, I think I wonder whether that also that what you just described between the kind of the fallen woman and the virginal woman also really reminded me of kind of Western representations of refugees, like the good refugee and the kind of bad refugee. So like if you kind of just assimilate and like not, you know, like are quiet and don't complain and just be grateful all the time for just being let to exist in this space. But as soon as you kind of speak up and like, you know, try and kind of stand up for your rights or like try and gain some more rights or like other things or these things, then suddenly like public opinion turns and it's like, oh, terrible, I mean, so ungrateful and like so disrespectful, and these kind of two archetype narratives of migrants or refugees or what it is.
I mean, yeah, definitely multicultural, like, kind of rhetoric, multiculturalism is pretty similar in that sense in Korea as well. Like there's a long way to go, I think, when it comes to multicultural policy in Korea. I mean, definitely when as a society is getting more mixed, and especially the countryside, there has to be a much more mature look at, you cannot just ask one side to be changing, right? Which kind of it shows in these dramas as well. Like, you know, you can't expect, the society in itself has to accommodate people. You can't expect people to squeeze into gaps, which is definitely shown through these programs.
I think it's quite interesting, like when because I obviously came to Korean dramas as a complete lay woman. Like, I don't have any background in Korean studies.
As all of us.
And like I perceived, like what I kind of consumed about Korea was like it's very homogenic. Like there's barely any, like, you know, it's basically 99.999% ethnic Koreans, and there's like zero. That's kind of how it is portrayed, and also you kind of
urban setting also like from the countryside is kind of a bit marginalized too. Yeah,
and that there's this really strong sense of oh, this is Korean, and this is our national identity and our cultural identity, and that there's. Or at least, and so like when you then learn, oh no, there is actually also quite a few, you know,
people,
or like living, or there is diversity actually, but it's just not, it feels it's not really represented as part of Korea. Like,
I mean, I don't know if I'm foreigner, that's why I end up like, even I go to the countryside, if I go somewhere else that is not Seoul, I always find like Asian Mart, or like, you know, there's always going to be so many signs that there are people who are not fully Korean living here, and that's so obvious, and it could be because my eyes are more open to it, definitely. But I mean, I think it's pretty, you can find an Asia Mart anywhere in this country, and especially in the rural areas, you can find it even more easier than Seoul, I would say. You can get some of the best Indian food outside Seoul.
Really?
I mean, Gyeonggi-do area is famous for many like migrant communities also, in where the factories are located, and Suwon, Incheon, and all like Yongin area, these places. Have much more, actually, yes, different groups of like what you would see in center Seoul, probably.
Even
though we lived in a community like with SNU, it was always a bit international community in a sense, but it is not this kind of
it definitely didn't feel very multicultural to me, like. Even if there were actually people who were from different parts of the world, it wasn't like in Seoul, it's very difficult to find a lot of things that, like, you know, there's no community. Maybe perhaps that's why.
I think
community in Seoul. I mean,
for like Chinese, there is maybe Taeryeom or like Gwangdae or something.
Definitely. Places. Like, there is in Indians as well. But it's definitely much more united, or kind of much more developed in Seoul. People are very like, and not just foreigners, but people generally are very atomized, I think, generally. It's a big city, and yes, the places of employment and you know, rural areas where women are married to are not here, so just lesser people also generally. So that's perhaps one of the bigger reasons why in urban dramas we don't. And you're right, like when I watched Korean dramas, I would have never imagined that there was such a huge community of you know, people from other parts of the world living here.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of the menial jobs as well, you know, not just English teaching. right.
Or not just foreign students. There was this one Netflix drama we talked about shortly, think, with
how was that? I never watched it.
We also didn't.
We didn't watch. I couldn't bring myself to watch it. I thought the trailer looked so terrible. I was like, I'm not gonna watch this.
It was just like, I can't.
Very cringy.
I'm just going to watch some cringe that does not have any relationship to me.
we had this whole experience ourselves as foreign students.
Exactly. Which is like, can, like, please make cringe content on not me in my life.
Exactly. I mean, I haven't really had this kind of student experience, but like also I found it just watching the trailer, like, nah, I'm not gonna, no. I'm gonna skip this. I'd rather watch, any of the, in quotation mark, techie, older, nostalgic dramas. That's way more.
I'm just that's like, they need to make more of Heaven's Garden, man. Like, they need
really.
Then we need more cooperative.
Yeah. Oh well, that aspect is definitely interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like,
when did you know that that Korea has one of the largest numbers of cooperatives?
Really?
Worldwide, even.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Rural cooperatives are a big thing. I think even bigger than like unionization, probably.
Mm.
Not
even the state ones like Nonghyeop or Salim Chohab, but also these private ones.
When I went to like the countryside, there was just so much like politics.
I love it.
Just like, it's just, yeah, like Nonghyeop, like there's a lot of people who are against, like, or you know, like kind of have reservations, and it's such a large cooperative. It's huge.
It is definitely. I mean,
one of the largest, probably. I mean, I'd wonder if it's not one of the largest in the world, like Nonghyeop.
No. Amazing. Oh, I want to read more about this. This sounds really interesting. I want to work in one of those as a guest worker. It can do an internship in the large cooperative in the countryside, and then I want to wear these flowery pants and the sun hats.
You can't enter
your very own.
Those. Yeah, you reach there, and someone's gonna throw you a pair of pants
and a hat.
Okay,
it's all about the hat.
Start weaving, lady.
When I come to Korea and you're still there and Max is there, then maybe we can do a tour of the countryside.
Yeah, I would love that.
Oh, yes,
Max, sure. Max does that stuff a lot, like by himself.
For research stuff.
Research.
I'll just have to. Yeah.
None of this has ever made me, like, you know, not watch Camellia. Like, you know, when the Camellia blooms.
I started it after I read it in your paper, but I couldn't finish.
You never watched it, really, when the Camellia
blooms? I never watched it. It's on my watch list. I heard about it.
Mm. Out of all the ones that I mentioned about, like, you know, like Gichon women, I think When the Camellia Blooms is probably the best one. Ooh. I mean, because it's got it's both the things about the countryside. It's both like land of, like, you know, it's actually very different than other ones. It's not as much of a land of fantasy in terms.
It doesn't look. I mean, we don't see the fields.
It's a crime drama, like, you know. It's a crime. Like it's a crime.
It's a crime.
It's the other end. Yeah, it's the other end of the. So it's like, again, like there's a serial killer on the loose.
Yes.
It's great.
But still, I mean, the whole community and all that is very similar to Kumbayong in the sense that, like, everyone knows each other. They always talk and gossip and like have this whole I don't know. I don't like this.
And she finds she finds herself a good policeman.
Oh,
little boy. What was it? Kang Han-il, right? I see. Kang Han-il, now I'm very much in it.
Kang Han-il is the policeman? Oh, I didn't recognize
that. Kang Han-il is, very much in acceptance of that choice that she made. I quite like him. He acts really well.
I didn't know he was the main.
He's the main guy, yeah.
Ah, yes. Interesting.
One other thing that I just thought about as well, like kind of as these kind of countryside communities and like kind of rural areas, was in Crash Landing on You. Have you watched that?
Yes.
Because there's it's like this countryside life and all this gossiping women, but just imagined in a North Korean village, right? Mm. And it's kind of portrayed quite similar, except for that there are all these comrades and, like, you know, obviously kind of communist.
You're absolutely right. I think it's a winning formula right now. Because she's such a chaebol, like, you can't just send her to like a simple village. You have to send her to bloody North Korea. To like a village in North Korea for her to have like the ultimate, like, you know, ultimate village experience. No electricity, no running water.
Only 3 hairstyles to choose from.
You're very right. Like, I never thought of that. Like, definitely. Also came out around the same time. It's all like, all in a row. Like, it's all within the same year or year and a half.
2019, 2020. Yeah, it's true. Definitely.
But for North Korea, it's often argued that the countryside is much more traditionally preserved compared to South Korea, because there were not so many like revitalization or like these movements Samal Undong, stuff like that, where they changed all the roofs to plastic and
I mean, to be honest, as much as we kind of like Samal Undong, there is, I mean, I'm careful about saying this, but there's a lot of like research about how it wasn't actually right now it's celebrated a lot, and it's and it's like, you know, sent over to like other African countries or Southeast Asian countries as a model of
that is close connected to, I mean, Park Geun-hye's government.
Yeah, it's very closely connected to one of the main things she did, the father's Samal Undong scheme, just kind of like in terms of ODA, it's like being sent as like intellectual ODA or whatever.
And I mean, she was in charge of Samal Undong at the time.
What is Samal Undong?
It's a new village movement, which was a like a rural revitalization scheme during the Park Chung-hee government.
Dictatorship.
Very, very debatable that how much effect it really had. I mean, very debatable because it was it's being like sent still as like, you know, knowledge systems that Korea used to develop to like other developing countries right now,
but in connection with I mean, in connection with fertilizers and Nonghyeop and all this, changes started in the 60s. This is not only like 70s Samal Undong, but this is a long process, obviously.
Long process, true, but like Samal, exactly. But yeah, with Samal Undong, I'm very like, I mean, I actually had a very big bit on this on my chapter that got completely cut off.
You can mention it here.
yes, you've got all the platform.
Because it's, I think it's important when we talk about the countryside, though, to mention it. And then, I mean, in comparison to North Korea, where there were similar, these kind of revitalization movements.
I'm sure there's like a specific study on like comparison between like the rural revitalization schemes of South Korea and preservation or non-revitalization of North Korean countryside. But you know, with North Korea, there was, it wasn't that it wasn't revitalizing. The system was very different.
It was completely different.
There was like, if I remember correctly, it was like self-reliance of within your region. So like within, say,
our North Korea class.
Together, right? Because every state or every province will have its own like same 10 set of factories, and there's like a lot of self-reliance that like, you know, the production within the province for the need of the province. So while that
I
was
think that was a bit later development though. Think you're right.
So it wasn't so but thing is, we cannot compare it to, I think personally, to Samal Undong, because like Samal Undong honestly was like, here's a bunch of bricks. Here's like a lot of cement. Really? Like, and you make the roads, you build the roofs. So there's a lot of asbestos, which is very bad for you, by the way, asbestos.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah,
yeah, it's terrible.
There's a lot of asbestos for your roof. And you know, so I really doubt the extent to which Samal Undong actually affected the revitalization, but I mean that is
how the village looks like, and how how it is portrayed in Gumbelyong.
Yeah,
it's before Samal Undong, because everyone changed the roof, and then also, orange ones. I mean, Little Forest, they still have the classical brick.
Roofs. Are a lot of places that still have that roof.
Like, really?
Non-orange roof.
Plastic ones are in very different colors.
Majority, but there's a lot of orange ones. Like Samal had a lot. I mean, you see a lot of like those.
Very ugly.
But there was definitely some houses, but they'll be very difficult to live in. Again, that comes into the entire realm of fantasy. Obviously, you would like to live in a house that looks that, you know, wooden.
Like Hanok.
But even in England, like, you know, there are, when I went to the English countryside, there were like a few rich people's houses that were like, they used hay and like, you know, like
the kind thatched of like, roofs. You
know, thatched roofs. Thatched roofs are really expensive. And they're like really, really expensive to maintain.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I was like, So even in Korea, like, to maintain a hanok house is actually not easy. Like, you can't have, like, I mean, as much as I am for, like, yes, single women living together, but, like, one person, like, climbing on the roof and fixing
that seems a bit
large
dangerous.
House, like,
yeah.
Like, it seems a bit, like, you know,
troublesome.
To me.
Wow.
Anyways, but I think for how the countryside looks like, still have some kind. I mean, the streets and all that. There are some interesting studies on this whole, also by anthropologists who went to the countryside before the movement and then afterwards, and then compare this, and then how the traditional village changed. And all that. Also, the village structure with all the urbanization processes. And
Interesting.
Especially in terms of your study, because you study ODA, so like you probably have studied like how the development took place during that very period.
I'm looking at this whole countryside. This is one of my chapters. That's why I really liked your article. Yeah, I will use it in my class.
Oh my god! No.
Make them all listen to this podcast, please.
Oh yeah, then we can do that too.
Oh,
yeah,
that's dear. Like a my students, I'm really very sorry.
No, but I also heard that currently they're producing a new, because Hometown Cha-Cha-Cha was such a success internationally as well, that they're producing just another Hometown Cha-Cha-Cha, basically, more or less, with like also a certain countryside on the sea.
You
side,
want another home side? Sorry, like this Hometown Cha-Cha-Cha. Just watch all the other dramas you mentioned.
Camellia
is literally like honestly the same kind of like Kim Son-ho figure who was like really like. You know, he is.
Yeah. But the police officer
gets all the attention from. Yeah.
The police officer seems a bit stupid, though. I mean,
but he's loved by everyone and he helps everyone out all the time. He does all that chores, like, you know, he's like, that was really actually really interesting in Hometown Cha-Cha. He never took money, like, he never took any more than, like, the minimum
weight
for his labor. I found that so interesting. I was just like, wow.
Like, it was quite funny. Yeah, he was very particular about also just giving the exact change and would get the coins out and people would like kind of roll their eyes at him being like, you know, just take the money, like I don't want the change. But
very,
he's like
very different, right, than when you see actual workers in the countryside, like in terms of like he is chosen voluntary poverty, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Voluntarily poor.
Yeah.
Which is when you actually think of poverty in the countryside, that's a really odd thing to like see.
Yeah. And I think that is almost a bit of a perversion, I think, of this whole kind of city imagination of the countryside. Because if you look at his home, I mean, it's so bourgeois. You can't even, I mean, with the camera collection and like all these like expensive wines and he has all these sophisticated things. But then he only takes minimum wage and you're like, something doesn't add up here.
Like,
he saves half of the time. He's like, it's like, this is great. Like, cool, sign me up.
like people will be like, you can do that in the countryside on minimum wage. I'd be like,
brilliant.
Like, no, like, it was actually really funny because I watched that, the Racket Boys. I don't know if you watched Racket Boys.
Oh, no, but everyone like talked about it was very positive.
Racket Boys is like, if you have like time and you're like feeling depressed.
Racket Boys, I think I'm saving it for a moment like that.
Racket Boys is like the go-to. And I mean, it I meant like if it's just a joke in it, like they also moved to the countryside, right? I mean, another one.
Oh, really?
I didn't know.
So the family moves to the countryside and like they try to like buy something and it's like more expensive or like so than the city, and they're like, aren't things supposed to be cheap? This is like countryside. and like the villager is just like, why the hell are things gonna be cheaper? Like, you know, it's actually more expensive than
more
the country.
Expensive.
than the city. So it was really funny, that bit. It really reminded me of hometown, like.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, you get free meals from people and you get free coffee from people. I guess it's okay if you know.
I don't know. And you never really see the living situation of all the other, or like even the other inhabitants of hometown cha cha cha. They're all doing quite well, quite middle class.
Yeah. I mean, one of them won a lottery. It's like everyone's economic concerns somehow like get easily resolved in the countryside. Yeah. No issue.
It's true. There's like, you don't fear, there's not this materialistic like pressure. Yeah. It's almost like that.
Capital is almost outside. Like, we don't need to talk about that, like, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like kind of a non-issue.
Right. And she, you know, like, even like being a dentist, like, I know being a dentist, like, you earn a lot of money, like, because it's like elite job and whatever.
Yeah.
But like, the main character on the show is like she had a spending problem, right?
Yeah.
Like, he would buy everything and anything for like.
Yeah. Lots of like shoes. Wearing,
yeah. So it's
her Cinderella shoes.
Empathize with Kim Sono's character because he'd be like, oh, you know, I don't earn like that. So like, you know, if you know, I can't like. So it's difficult for me to feel bad for him because he can earn like that if he wanted to.
Yeah.
He's an engineer, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that I think that in that drama, actually, because in our episode, we didn't get to talk about the end because we recorded it before the end happened. But I thought the end of the whole hometown cha-cha-cha drama was a bit weak. Like, the reason why he went to the countryside, it was so built up. And in the end, it was a bit shitty.
Yeah, I agree.
It didn't really make any sense. And now that you remind me of that, I thought that was very... It's a very strange. I would have expected like a way better explanation of why this single guy, hot single guy, is living in the countryside with all these ajumas and, you know,
waiting,
taking minimum, waiting for this for the first queenong.
I'm just hoping, guys, that we don't get attacked by like fans of that.
Fans of home. Sally already like has the Twitter community on her side because
I tweeted a lot about hometown cha cha cha. Yes, I did. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, you haven't really made it in life these days if you don't have at least a few haters. So maybe this is our moment.
I mean, guys, like, I mean, I'm criticizing all these dramas because I've watched them, like, and I've watched them, like, I actually like them. That's why
I know. Them. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're always trying to also like emphasize.
We had a critical
drama. But what we want to kind of emphasize is, but because we love these dramas so much, this criticism comes from a place of love and care, right? So
mostly.
Yeah, mostly. So it's not to put the drama down, but rather to elevate it.
To learn from it, to like see why it's made, like it's interesting as students of like, for us at least, like we're students of Korean studies, so for us it's important to have a critical insight into these things. Otherwise, what's the point to be
also Korean? As critical international viewers, like from a different perspective.
Yeah, not consuming it as you know Hallyu propaganda in any sense.
Like.
Seeing it, it's a country, it's got like, you know, society and it's got a cultural context, and to view it within that context is very important.
Yeah, I think, yeah, definitely. And like also like take it as a lens to kind of also view other countries or definitely. Contexts or societies and compare it. I think that's also always very interesting, particularly like internationally, to sometimes draw draw out commonalities maybe, or these things, like seeing the more meta structure.
We need more critical drama studies like your book.
Exactly.
I would ask you guys to pick it up, but it's too damn expensive for me to pick up, so I'm still waiting for my copy.
Don't you get author's copies? Aren't
you? I mean, it hasn't arrived yet. I mean, but it's
it said like published date is in March.
2020. So it got published, but and you can buy it, like, and you can buy an e-copy.
We can buy it from for our library.
You can also buy an e-copy personally, but that's much cheaper. But if you are interested in gender and sexuality in the Hallyu and you know in mainstream Korean media.
Yes, we are. Everyone, buy the book. Worth it. Or make your university buy the book.
Just go to the library, otherwise.
Exactly. I think that is the way to go. Like, honestly, like, academic publishing is so crazy expensive that really it's probably cheaper to just enroll into a program with the university and then access everything through the
library. It depends on the program. Well, England might be not that.
Not in England. In Germany, it's an option.
In Germany, yeah.
Please take me.
Just view it as a subscription.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Do you have any last remarks?
Do you want to give your usually what we do is when we like talk about a drama, we kind of give it a from 0 to 10
rating
of how you would recommend other people to watch it.
So I would give Little Forest, I mean, because we talked about a few of them this time, didn't we?
Yeah.
Little Forest is that out of 10?
Okay. Yeah, out of 10.
I would definitely give Little Forest 7, like, or an 8. It's pretty high.
Nice.
Because it's beautifully made, I mean, have to say.
Mm. Yeah, and, I agree. It was also very entertaining. I can agree.
And perhaps I would give Namcheon very Namcheon Over the Mountain will get a solid 2.
Wow, 2 is maybe the lowest.
That's the lowest score in our history. I love it.
Really? Oh my god, Namcheon Over the Mountain was like, you know, very difficult watch. Only watch for this chapter, but I would definitely suggest people to watch Gombaeryeong.
Heaven's Garden.
It is, I think it's, I don't know if it was available on Netflix and it comes and goes, like, see if it's still available in your region.
It's on Viki, actually. Oh, so for people who use
Viki. So you can get the subtitles there if wherever you are. And I think it deserves a watch if you're interested in Korean society, rural society, and the kind of changes happening. And, you know, in terms of capitalism entering Korean rural society, although it's from like 10 years ago, it's still very relevant, I'd say. And some of the, you know, the main, like, the one of the actors who plays the older guy, he's one of the, like, most famous Korean actors who plays role. I think I can't remember his name all of a sudden. But so if you're interested, you can give it a watch. And I would give it, like, I would give that an 8, definitely. Although because it's 10 years old, and there's a lot of, like, you know, politically incorrect stuff. If you really look at it, I wouldn't like say politically, definitely problematic stuff. Politically incorrect kind of suggests that I'm just trying to be like, you know, it's just too woke. Problematic. So keep that in mind while watching it. But same with Little Forest as well. Like, I mean, don't go running.
Don't read the paper first, but read your paper afterwards for like some.
You ain't getting any of that nice food. Like, no one, no one's making you tiramisu in the country.
I was hoping. I mean, this, like, oh my god, that food looked very good. I have to.
I have to say, it was delicious.
She did this hobakchon and she did makgeolli herself.
Wow.
I tried to make makgeolli myself. Yeah, it was very, very sour. But it was not. It wasn't bad. But it were way too many bottles from, like, I made it with a friend. But yeah.
And even she makes this, like, dog cake and all that looks so difficult, and it must take like several hours to make this.
Dog is like famously difficult to make, right? At home.
Yeah.
Nobody like makes it at home. It just goes. Rice cake.
I never saw how they actually make it. I mean, pot I saw, but the dog, I mean, just as new, was always new.
Because there needs to be a lot of pressing to make something like dog, and you need a machine to do that, like to do it at home. You
didn't see that in detail in the film, but yeah, it was.
Yeah, she. Impressive. It was all very, like, the process is never really shown for, like, a lot of things. Things just get done.
Yeah, that reminds me of this one anime of what it's called The Way of the House Husband, and it's about a retired Yakuza. Seeing him at home and doing, like, perfectly, like, the cooking and then sometimes like cleaning and like all the processes. It's like, you know, sometimes they had these YouTube channels of these traditional housewives, like also in Japan or like Korean housewives, and they get up at 5 a.m. and then they make like these elaborate lunch boxes and then they, you know, like,
I think you told that in another episode.
Oh, did I? Yeah,
maybe
because I was very impressed. So yeah, that kind of sounds a bit like that satisfaction.
I think definitely Japan kind of like started the trend of that kind of like domestic bliss, kind of, like joy in small domestic like activities, like minimalistic kind of. Way there's a lot like these days that I watched something called like Kotaro Who Lives Alone. Is like a little boy.
I watched that too. Yeah,
it was so sweet, and he lived alone. It's like small tasks he would do that are like you know, romanticized and kind of moved into and looked at. Very interesting.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, no, that just reminded me of this. You guys describing all this food and like amazing looking food and like how she cooks it and like all these elaborate processes and so on. I think, yeah, that alone seems to be a reason to watch it.
I mean, I don't know about Namcheon, but this other two I do recommend. I don't know if you even had, I shouldn't even have mentioned it. Now I feel bad about rating it too. it's from 2002. I mean, I don't think it's even easy.
Yeah.
It's also probably hard to find it, you know, actually. Right.
Yeah, that was.
Well, thank you. Thank you a lot for coming and
thank you for having
your time.
Yeah, it was so illuminating. I learned a lot in this episode. Oh, it was very, very, it definitely elevated our podcast. So thank you.
No, I had a lot of fun talking to you guys.
Very academic, like, Tom.
I'm sorry. Like, I didn't know, like.
No.
Like, I didn't know, like, what level. Like, at what, like, should I be talking too much about my stupid chapter or should I be, like.
No, it was a good mix, I think.
I thought it was perfect. Definitely.
I enjoyed a lot talking to you guys because you guys have watched all of the same stuff that I watch and, you know, waste my life at watching. Especially with the last 2 years, you know, there's been a lot of drama going on.
I'm telling you, the drama saved me during the pandemic for sure. It was like my number one escapism. It was that. Oh my god, this is already the end of our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If so, please leave us a comment or write us on Facebook or Twitter or via our email address, kdramafeuilleton@gmail.com. We are always happy to hear from our listeners, so from you, basically, be it suggestions of dramas to review or critique, of course, praise, or just wanting to say hello and have a chat about the latest goss that's going on in K-drama world. We always, always appreciate your time and opinions. Now go back to watching your dramas, stay critical, as always, and we cannot wait to see you for our next episode. Goodbye! 안녕!